Right, it is about time for us to get started here at 1:15. And my name is George Murphy. I'm going to be presenting in this area, same room here tomorrow afternoon. But for now, I am the moderator of these three talks in the first session of Faith and Science Education. General rules, which I think you're all aware of, each speaker has 20 minutes. To speak and 5 minutes for questions afterwards, although they can leave more time for questions out of their 20 minutes if they wish. We'll have a 5 minute break between each presentation. The first presentation this afternoon is Kristen Mudrack, Chemistry and Society, Integration of Faith and Science in General Education.
When I was in college, we used to call this the nap session, so hopefully I can keep you awake today as we go through. I was walking into lunch this afternoon and got told, oh, the student roundup is over there. I promise I'm not a student. I am a faculty member at Milligan College in Tennessee. And when I came to Milligan College, I got presented with a class called Chemistry and Society, and I was told, do what you want with it, but don't do what the last person did. I said, okay, what'd the last person do? And they said, well, they took this class, which here's the course description for you to see. They took this class and they taught it as Gen Chem. This is a class for majors who are not science majors. We get some exercise science majors, but not very many. And basically, this professor taught this class as Gen Chem, which if any of you took Gen Chem in college, you know that if you're not a science major, you hate it. And even if you are a science major, you also probably still hate it. When I took a look at this course description, what I realized was that this was not supposed to be Gen Chem. This was supposed to be chemistry for people who had no interest in it and probably didn't like it all that much. And so I started thinking about how to make this class accessible to these students as well as interesting to them. Because what I didn't want to do was scare them away, and I didn't want to make them see chemistry as something that was harmful to them, which is what a lot of them came in thinking. So I started by asking them, what do you think of chemistry? This was a survey I took at the end of class, at the end of the semester, but this is what they told me. They said, oh my goodness, it's hard. It's boring. It's terrible. It's awful. It's going to be difficult. It's a lot of math. I don't want to be here. That's the playing field I started with. And for those of you who teach general education science classes, you know that this is usually what you start with. And so in order to get these students to even think about what I was presenting to them and understand it, even at a simple level, I needed to get them to not be afraid of it. And so I started with what many of my colleagues would call an unmeasurable learning objective. You know, having written learning objectives, that they need to be measurable. This is not. I wanted to see that they could recognize, communicate, and appreciate science. The only way I could figure out to measure that, and by the way, I've only been teaching for 2 years, so if you've got other ideas, please shoot them at me. Is a survey of some sort. So what I started with was that first question that I posed to them. What do you think of chemistry when you started? And at the end, I asked them, what do you think of it now? And that's the way I measured this. Granted, it's not perfect, but it's what I got right now. So I started by saying, how do I want to structure this class? How do I want to get them engaged? And so I broke this class up into three different sections. Where we live. So let's talk about things that they've heard in the media. Let's talk about global warming, climate change, and how that relates to chemistry and how that relates to them. Let's talk about what we eat. So let's talk about nutrition, the things you just put into your body 20 minutes ago. What's the chemistry of that? And then finally, who we are. And this section does delve a little bit more into the biochemistry, but I wanted to talk about genetics and specifically genetically modified organisms. That relate to nutrition and things like that. So I couched this entire semester as, what does this mean to you? So what things have you heard of that I might be able to build off of? And I know this is a lot of text on one page, but I want to use it to show you that I talk about sustainability. And I use that to introduce the concepts of things like renewable and non-renewable resources, which if you stand up in front of a class of non-chemistry majors and say, non-renewable and renewable resources, they all fall asleep. If you couch it in terms of sustainability, they all go, oh, that's something I've heard of. I use air pollution and climate change, and particularly the Paris Agreement that the U.S. dropped out of, and all of the administrative difficulties right now with climate change, to talk about things in Gen Chem like units and scientific notation, chemical formulas, reactions, which again, if you stand up in front of a class of students who don't want to be there and start talking about these things, they're going to tune you out. But when you couch it in terms of air pollution and climate change, things that they've heard of, they might start listening. My hope was that they would engage with this material so that they would actually learn it and want to learn it. I use ozone layer depletion to talk about the octet rule, Lewis structures. This is the section of the class the students have the most difficult time with because it is hard science to a lot of them. It is math. It is things like dimensional analysis that they remember from high school chemistry and go, no, I don't want to do that. But when we talk about it in terms of climate change and how certain things are affecting the environment, now it matters. I use energy to talk a little bit in the physical chemistry realm of thermodynamics, reactions, and we do a lot of this in lab as well. So this is a class that has a 2-hour lab section with it, and I use a lot of household chemicals. We did a lab, which I don't think I'm going to repeat next year, where I let them set things on fire, like hairspray. Probably not the best decision in the world. I'll just leave it at that. In the what we eat section, I get to talk about polymers and plastics. I get to talk about the functional groups that we talk about in organic chemistry in particular, and the big six of the polymers, the ones that are recyclable, the ones that aren't. Nutrition, we get to talk about the chemical structure of fats, carbohydrates, proteins, what that actually means when it goes into your body. And again, this delves a little bit into the biochemistry of things, which is one of my areas of expertise, and so it's something that I enjoy talking about, but I enjoy getting people to understand and engage with. We also get to talk about things like obesity and diabetes. The food contributions to emissions is one of the things that takes us back to the previous section on where we live and how that makes a difference in what you eat and what you choose to eat based on how many food miles it's traveled and things like that. We talk about drug design and the chemical design of these drugs. Drugs of abuse is a particularly hot topic in the United States right now, and so we talk about those as well. And then a little bit of how they're metabolized, and drugs here in the sense of both recreational use as well as ones that are prescribed in the office. The hottest topic by far in this section is genetically modified organisms. Most of these students come into this class saying, oh, genetically modified organisms? I don't even know what that means, but no. Organic? Yes, I'll take that. I want them to try to figure out why they have that particular notion and how that actually manifests itself in the chemistry, but also in their lives. The last section of this class is probably what made me be able to give this talk today, because I use one of Collins's books, The Language of God, to talk about bioethics and genetic engineering. I have them watch Gattaca, which a lot of them have never even heard of before. And if you've never seen it, it's worth watching. But we get to talk about, are we playing God? Can we do this and should we do this? This is by far the section that the students last year enjoyed the most, because it was different. It was something that they could actually discuss, and they knew what was going on in the chemistry because of the previous two sections of the class. I would never have been able to talk about DNA without talking about the chemical structure of things like amino acids and proteins and all of the stuff that we talked about from the very beginning. Throughout the course, I have somewhere between 6 and 10 discussions that we have throughout the class. And this is something that I wasn't sure how it was going to work when I first started, but Each of these questions I gave to the students, and I gave them a few articles for each one to come into class having read. I found out near the end of the semester, they didn't read them all. It shouldn't surprise me at this point in my life, but they didn't. The ones that did read the articles, though, they were able to come into class and discuss the positions they came up with. I asked them to come in with two sentences worth of their answer to these questions. So, for example, are GMOs harmful to the environment or to humans? Are they helpful in any way? Yes, GMOs are harmful to the environment by blah, 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 blah. And yeah, I think they're helpful because. That's what they would come in with. We would then take the entire class period and have a discussion that I would facilitate. And they would then have to write a paper at the end of class to say, here's where my position is now, here's where it started, and here's why my position has changed. This was, again, by far one of the pieces of the class that the students enjoyed the most. It was something that was relevant to them, and we would never have been able to talk about the Paris Agreement or climate change having not done the chemistry beforehand. When I started looking at this class, I started at the very end, and so I created a final project in which I wanted them to look at 2 weekends of observation. So the first weekend I asked them to do in August, so very near to the beginning of the semester, and I gave them these categories of transportation, products, food, activities, and other. And I said, hey, I just want you to write down where you see chemistry in your life. And so I expected something like this first box up here. I bought fresh fruit and vegetables from the grocery store, took me gas to get there. I got cereal in a container from the dining hall. The cereal might be organic, I don't know, I didn't look at the package. And oh yeah, I bought a Diet Coke from the vending machine and it's in plastic. That's where I expected them to start, and that is exactly where most of them started. What I hoped by the end, when I asked them to do this again in November, was that they would be much more specific. So the gas to get to the store caused the release of greenhouse gases, the vegetables are local, so the food miles are less, the plastic in your 20-ounce bottle has a number on the bottom that means it's recyclable, things like that. This was all things that we had talked about, and I realized that this is a lofty goal, that I expected them to get to from point A to Z in a different alphabet very quickly. That being said, my students blew me away. I had 7 students in this class, and what I asked them to do in the final exam period was to give me a presentation, to stand up in front of their classmates and say, hey, here's where I saw chemistry that I didn't before. And so I picked a few slides from my students just to show you what they came up with. I asked them to give me an introduction, and this was by far my favorite introduction of the semester. In the beginning, I saw chemistry as nothing more than numbers and equations that related to the chemicals in the safety closet. Hence the reason I waited until my senior year to take my mandatory chemistry, which most of these were juniors and seniors. Thank the Lord for Dr. E. I don't know if I would have said thank the Lord for me, but thank the Lord for chemistry, because we wouldn't be here without it. I then asked them to take the 3 major sections of the class and give me a specific example. So the students looked at where would they eat, or what they eat, where they live. They gave me specific examples of where they saw products coming from, the type of plastic that their credit card was made out of, the things that contributed to the pollutants and gas. A couple of them even calculated their carbon footprint, which I didn't ask them to do. They told me what the greenhouse gases were. They knew how to draw them. Blew my mind. I didn't think they were ever going to get this far. There were other students that looked at, oh, I should mention, this student here was a race car driver in his spare time. And so he latched on to the greenhouse gas emission part of this class and loved it. This particular student was into eating organic things, and so that's what she latched onto in this class. Each of my students found something different that they could take from this class that I never honestly expected them to see. Another student looked at the slalom skiing that she did in her second weekend and was able to see what materials were made up her paddling boat and the boat that she was in, what kind of gas was used in her boat that her parents had, what the life jackets were made up of. I had other students see the products that they used and the medications that they used. And this student in particular, you can see, was very vague. Not all of my students managed to get from point A to point B successfully, but as I think you can see from the survey I'll show you at the end, they learned something. And if I had simply walked in and taught them Gen Chem with no context, I don't think that would have happened. I asked them to give me a conclusion at the end of their presentation, and this was one of my favorites. Because one of the things in the discussions that we did was talk about faith very, very heavily. In the bioethics section, but as well as the sustainability and what you eat, faith was all over this course. This particular student is not from the U.S. And came into this class saying that chemistry was a threat to his faith. And he walked out saying it wasn't. I don't know how many of you are teachers in here, but I count that as a huge win. I never expected my students to walk out with that kind of a mentality. I hoped they would, but I don't think I ever expected it. He also said that there's more good to chemistry than bad. Praise the Lord. Thank you. That this class helped him understand the need for better decision-making in life choices, and that now he can contribute to the fight for a clean earth. And remember, these are students who have no interest in chemistry, biology, science at all. These are students who walk in here hating my subject, my class, me. They don't like me until they walk out of this class. Some of them still don't like me, but that's okay. This is the way I measured my learning objective. And again, if you have better ways for me to measure this, please tell me. But this is what I asked them. Now that you've taken this class, what do you think of chemistry? And again, these students blew my minds. It's enjoyable, interesting, and life applicable. It's interesting, relevant. This student was very honest. It's still hard, but I can see it now. And that's what I wanted from them. I wanted them to be able to see, appreciate, recognize chemistry and not be scared of it. I wanted them to be able to talk to their friends about it and say, oh yeah, that stuff you're hearing on the news, it's not entirely true, and here's why. And they did that. And it's something I never, again, expected. One of the things I got from these students this last year was that they hated the textbook I used. And I know we don't always have to listen to our students when they say that, but the textbook I used was an ACS textbook, Chemistry in Context, and they found it very difficult to follow. As a chemist, I didn't find it hard to follow, but they did. And so what I'm doing in this next fall is I'm switching to a couple of books that are not necessarily written by scientists. So Sam Keen's book, The Disappearing Spoon, is one that we have used in our department a little bit to talk about the elements on the periodic table, how they're put together, where they were discovered. It's got a lot of history in it. And so it's something I hope my students will enjoy. And if you're interested to know what they think, let me know and I will tell you absolutely everything they tell me, whether it's good or bad. The other thing I'm gonna use is Jeffrey Bennett's Global Warming Primer. This is one that I came across when I was looking for textbooks. It does a very good job of laying out global warming and the case for it and climate change in the context of real world. And then in the context of science. I will keep teaching all of the concepts of science, especially those that you would get in a general chemistry class, with these two books, but it's not something that the students will have to read and try to comprehend on their own. It's something that I will present to them in class and be able to talk about with them. I'm going to continue using the language of God, particularly in the last section of class, to talk about who we are and what makes us who we are, both as Christians and both as humans. If you're interested in anything, any of the textbooks or anything that I've used, I've included them for you here, and I'm happy to take as many questions as you've got and any suggestions that you have as well.
I think we've got a couple of minutes, more than five.
Yep, so, sure.
Hardy Root from Appalachian State. As a person who teaches nutrition and also as a member of the American Chemical Society, I'm very glad to see your whole thing on the foods and nutrition there. One of the roles that we can do in introductory courses, and I also teach one, is to do a lot of debunking of a lot of silliness out there. Can you tell me, give some examples of how you are able to do that from the chemical point of view for these introductory students? Give some examples of.
Yeah, sure. A lot of that came through the discussions that we did, to be completely honest. So the questions that I posed, I made sure that they were things that were in the media right now that needed some debunking. Some of them not so much, but the GMOs in particular is one that I can point to. Most of them came in saying, GMOs are bad. They couldn't tell me what it stood for. They couldn't tell me what it meant. They couldn't even tell me if this grape was GMO or this one wasn't. And so being able to point them to articles by scientists and lay people who have looked at this issue and said, yeah, these are okay, or no, they're not. I made sure I presented them with things that were both on the good side of GMOs and the bad side of GMOs, so that they could see that there are people on both sides, but most of them were able to come to the conclusion that the science was actually right, in that case in particular.
Former chemistry teacher. I didn't use chemistry in context, but I taught in a Christian high school, and I used Chemistry in the Community, mm-hmm. which was their high school book. And I found it, I did a number, not all the things, but a number of the approaches that you had taken, and I think the kids really appreciated it. In high school, you get a mixture of the ones that have to take it and the ones who just slide in.
Sure.
But I found that the book needed a fair amount of work to make sure I got the important topics covered.
Yes and no. So the Where We Live portion of the class, I found that textbook to be very, very helpful. It laid out energy, climate change, and the chemistry behind it very well. The nutrition section, very much lacking. It did not do a good job of presenting it to somebody who has never seen the science before. And so that took a lot of kind of backpedaling for me to be able to explain it to them. That book doesn't really include a lot on genetics and kind of the biochemistry of genetics, and so that was something I added in. And please no one ask me if I'm ever writing a textbook, because I am in my second year at Milligan. No, not going to do it. If you ask me in 10 years, maybe. But it definitely takes a little bit more than just the textbook to get this class to where I think it needs to be. And I'm hoping that the three textbooks I'm using next year will help to supplement that, because a lot of my notes I'm still going to take from Chemistry in Context, but they won't know that because they don't have to have that textbook, if that makes sense.
I want to know to what extent you supplement this with videos and animations in chemistry, because you're talking textbooks, and I find that the younger generation really isn't too interested in reading anything.
Yep.
I can suggest, I recorded Sam Keen giving a talk on his book, The Disappearing Spoon. I can send that link to you.
Thank you. Yeah, especially in when we were talking about energy and how we actually get gasoline, I found a lot of really good videos on that. And those were some of the classes that the students walked out going, that was cool. And I think the visual really helped. There are obviously some things that you just got to draw the structure on the board, and they're going to have to suck it up. But there are many, many things that I did find good videos on that were able to help supplement what I had said already and what they were have supposed to have read, but probably didn't, and that they then were able to take away from. My first clue that they weren't reading what I told them to do was our last discussion. It was part of the Collins book. I asked them to read the four opinions on how the earth was created, how humans were created. And as they were going through their two sentences, one of my students said, oh, I'm a creationist, here's why. A couple students later said, oh, I think I agree with BioLogos more. And that first student said, what's that? And so we explained it, and he goes, yeah, I think I actually agree with that. I didn't read that. That was the last class period of the school year.
What sorts of publications do you find have articles that are appropriate for use with that sort of class? Obviously, you're not looking at Nature, but you're also not looking at, random blog posts on the internet.
Yeah.
Where do you find something that's appropriate
A lot of what I've used for this class so far has come from JChemEd, the Journal of Chemical Education by the ACS. A lot of that has been the laboratory section of the class. Some of it has simply been me Googling to try to figure out who has written something on this topic, and then searching through those to figure out, is this something they would be able to understand? Is this something that's relevant to what we're talking about? And is it something that is reputable? Is it written by somebody who is at least somewhat of an expert in their field? And that's not always easy to find. So that is definitely a work in progress, and something that will probably be changing in the years to come. Good question.
Okay, I think that's going to be the last question.
Okay.
5 minutes, give or take, will be our second talk. Thank you.